One blessed with testing. I am indeed. Yeah. All right. Okay, Andy. If we, so now I'm going to take, we'll put it back up there. So our text this morning then is Matthew chapter 2, verses 13 to 15. Actually, I'm following the church calendar just for once. There, you, the church calendar and myself are right on track this Sunday. This most likely would be the gospel reading. And it reads like this. When they had gone, that's the wise men, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I call my son. A word of prayer, and then we'll take it from there. Lord, we commit the reading of this scripture. Lord, thousands upon thousands of years ago, and yet we know, Lord, it's in there for a reason. And Lord, our prayer this day is that through this portion of scripture, this is what we have, that you would speak to us anew, afresh. Lord, we ask this for us here in your life, for those who listen as well. May you guide us into truth, even fresh truth for all of us. And Lord, may your patience reign, Lord, as we walk our way through all of this. And all of God's people said, you go to bed and you have a mindset. Your life, as you know, you are in Bethlehem. And during the night, everything changes. Your man has a dream. And the dream is the angel speaking to him, saying, get up, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill it. If you were Mary and Joseph and you were in bed and you heard that for the first time, how many of us would have a John McEnroe moment? You can't be serious. We read it and we think of the Holy Family moving along like as if no feathers were ruffled. Like as if it was the easiest request that you could get. If that happened to you, would you say, thy will be done, Jesus? Or would it be, you can't be serious, man? Our reactions to these kind of things tell us a great deal. When I study my own reactions, it tells me where I really am as opposed to where I think I am. Does that, you know what I'm saying? It tells me much more so. Your reactions are a great thing. Now, I don't know if you can relate to Jesus with those John McElroy, or what's his name, yeah? John, yeah? McEnroe moments. Have you had those moments with Jesus and say, you can't be serious? Or are you of the most saintly disposition? And say, consider it done, Jesus. Get up, he said, this is the angel, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. It's a shocking request. And when things like that come to you, they come from the blue, there's several things you have to deal with. And I put on three hurdles that you have to overcome. Sometimes we won't get past hurdle number one. You'll see yourself. So I'm talking to myself here, because Jesus and I often have these conversations because of this kind of stuff. First thing you have to deal with is the suddenness of it. You see, Mary and Joseph and Jesus, though it was maybe around two, went to bed, and it was like a night, like any other night, as far as we know. So this command came from nowhere. See, there was no prior warning or advance notice. At least if you have some prior warning and you have some advance notice, you can get your head around it a little. It doesn't make it any easier, but at least it's a help. The suddenness of it is shocking. Would you agree? It's just shocking. Get up, take the child, and escape to Egypt in the middle of the night. Now, what's hard about this is that the angel Gabriel spoke to Mary about, you know, how Jesus was going to be conceived in the womb and all that. An angel came to Joseph and spoke to Joseph about taking Mary. But there's no mention of this. He must have forgotten it. He ran out of time. Nothing. So no advance warning. Next thing you have to deal with is simply this. Surprises. We all like surprises if they're pleasant. But who wants a surprise like that? Certainly not me. I've had my go to Egypt moments with Jesus. Several of them. It's not a regular occurrence, but it's more often than it should be, to be honest with you. So, surprise like that. Next thing you have to deal with is simply this. How many of us would say that? Look at that. You can't spring something like this on me and expect an instant response. Is that a fair human reaction? Get up, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. No prior warning, no advance notice. And he could have, because there was enough communication going on. Saying, you can't spring something like that on me, expect an instant response. But that's exactly what has been done. Now, often we don't get any further than that. Does that make sense? Any of those trees can trip us up. We're gone. And we're hopping mad with God. No, maybe you're not like that. But this is how I can often react. Could you not have told me? Listen here, you can't be just pulling that kind of things out of the box. And yet he did it. So the suddenness of it is extremely difficult to get. And yet we all know in life things just come to us suddenly. You can be fine one day and next thing you're sick. Everything can go be fine in the family and next thing you can go pear-shaped. Suddenness is a wonderful thing if it's a surprise and it's pleasant. But it's horrendous if it's the reverse. Suddenness catches me all the time. Even though I say I must expect the unexpected. When it comes, I'm still caught. So that's the first thing. No, you say, Lord, no prior warning, no advance notice. I don't like surprises like that. You can spring something on me like that and expect a response. How about if God comes back to you and says, yes, I can, I'm God. And I do expect an immediate response. What do you do then? Then you go into the full flight of John McEnroe. That's where you have to keep some of your ammunition. Often what happens is the Lord doesn't speak. But if he does, and you get that. Now that's kind of rubbing salt into the wound, isn't it? I'll give you for examples now. So I'm not continuing here. I'm just saying this is what the Lord has me doing. And if you ask me what was my biggest struggle in 2018, this. Anyway, the suddenness. God can do what he wants, and he does expect an immediate response. It's a killer. But that's exactly what happened to Mary and Joseph that night, all those thousands of years ago. So the suddenness of it. Well, get up. He said, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. That's bad enough, but look at the next line of it. Stay there until I tell you. For Herod is going to search for the child to kill it. Next thing you have to deal with is the inconvenience of it. Don't tell me that is not inconvenient. Do you know how far it is from Bethlehem to the Egyptian border? Somewhere around 800 miles. That's an awful long way from a pleasant walk over in the Camino, you know. This is horrendous stuff. Inconvenient. And the thing is, the middle of the night. It's just desperate. No, when that comes, get up, take your child and the mother and step to Egypt. The first thing I say to Jesus, I'd like to remind him. Do you realize the hardship and the trouble that this is going to cause? No, do you think that's a fair objection to bring before the Lord? Isn't it? Isn't it? It's reasonable. It's not unreasonable. It's very reasonable. What's unreasonable here is the request. Get up. And it's the middle of the night. Lord have mercy. I can feel myself having a dispute with Jesus before we're off. Actually, we had several disputes while I was putting this together. I didn't even want to do it. Even this was a dispute. Do you realize the hardship and trouble it's going to cause? And it would be tremendous hardship and a lot of trouble, in fairness, for Mary and Joseph. It is no easy job to go that length. It really isn't. With a young child. Probably with a young child is a nightmare. That's what it is. That's the first thing I'd say to him. The thing I'd say to him is this. Oh, wait a minute. This is what God said. Then you get the same response back. You know, yes, I am God. And I do expect an immediate response. The hardship and the trouble and all that statement is completely ignored. Now that's really difficult. Because I want to let God know how inconvenient it is what he's asking me to do. And he doesn't seem to be that interested in that level of inconvenience. And that's hard to do because we have grown up in a consumer-driven Christianity of where God is here to meet my needs. And when it goes the other way around, and he's not, and he's asking me to do something that is downright inconvenient and is full of hardship. That's the absolute opposite. So of course it's going to produce a reaction within me. It's incredibly inconvenient, and he should have thought of that. He doesn't. And there's no backing down from the request. There's no modifying it. There's no giving it. In spite of the rant, still. So the inconvenience of it. The inconvenience alone will stumble many, many people. I'll go no further because it's too inconvenient. Not necessarily hard, but can you relate to that? The suddenness and the inconvenience of it. Inconvenience is desperate. You know, it seems to me God always seems to interrupt you when you have a plan. Have you noticed that? Kind of rails the thing in. It's wonderful to be close, God often seeking the Lord and having an open mind, but when you have a kind of a plan or you're following along, next thing he changes it. He doesn't even consult you, he just tells you, this is what you're to do now. But Lord, do you realize how inconvenient that is? Do you realize, Lord? And everyone has something to do, and he interrupts it, and that's really difficult. It's difficult practically, it's difficult emotionally, it's difficult mentally to do so. Would you agree? Well, maybe not for you. Maybe you can handle inconvenience much more than I can. Kills me anyway. So, all right. So, if the suddenness doesn't get you, the inconvenience, and you, let's say, you handle that. Well, you're way ahead of me. There's one more block that I have to stumble with. Now, you wouldn't say this to God because you wouldn't have to cheat to do this, right? But I would, because I believe in being straight with God. Are you ready for the next one? You have to be very careful how you say this. Very careful. But nevertheless, it's in the heart. So it's not so much the inconvenience, it's this. The inconsideration. God, you realize how inconsiderate you are by even asking me to do that. Have you got any consideration for my time, my schedule, my goals, my dreams? Does my thing not actually matter to you? Because, Lord, I have a plan for today. I have a plan for next week. And you're mucking it up. And as far as I am concerned, you are not considering me. And dare I say, Jesus, but we're going very close to inconsideration. First of all, there's the middle of the night. Get up, take the child, and accept the merger. The first thing you say is, Jesus, do you realize the time it is? How many of you would say that? It's the middle of the night. Why couldn't he do it in the middle of the day? Why does it have to be in the middle of the night? Does that strike you as being a bit inconsiderate? Truthfully, now I'm not saying Jesus is inconsiderate, he's not. But humanly speaking, does it strike you that way? When that hits you smack in the middle, it does strike you as being a bit inconsiderate, doesn't it? I wonder how did Mary react. Anyway, that's the first thing. Next thing you realize is, why did you tell me all this during the day? He had sent the angel Gabriel to Mary. He could have put that in there. By the way, look, you'll have to, the birth will be in the stable. You'll hang around Bethlehem for a while, but you're going to have to go to Egypt. It's not there. God knew about it, but he didn't slip it in as part of the plan. He held it back. Most people once say, I want to know exactly what I am committing myself to before I commit myself. Are you with me? The problem is God doesn't do that. Well, sometimes he does, but often he doesn't. And this is a great example of it. And when it happens, the inconsideration of God is appalling, as far as I'm concerned. No, you wouldn't say that, but I bet you feel it. And lastly, can't this wait till morning? How many people have said that? Get up and take the child and escape to Egypt. Can't it wait till the morning at least? Can we not get a night's sleep out of it? No, that's inconsiderate. I don't care what you think of that. Having to get out of bed in the middle of the night and head off to Egypt. Don't tell me that is considerate. It is necessary. Would you put that into high consideration for you, if that was you? And the thing is, he did it. We are looking here and he did it. And some of them might have been, Mary could have been Hannah's age. Like some chance with a geezer like me, with a bit of mileage and a bit of down the road. This was a young couple. So you have the three things. You have the suddenness, no advance warning. You have the inconvenience of it. And let's face it, it's also quite inconsiderate of your time scale, your feelings, your purposes, and your dreams. No, the question is, most likely, would you agree, is that God has thought of all of this before we've got to it. That those anticipations, those responses that we come up with, or whatever the ones you'd have, he has that figured out. I am convinced when God gives instructions like this, he has a pair of noise-canceling earphones on his head when the message gets to me. He says, give the message, not wait till 11 o'clock. Ring him, or whatever he does it. And then he puts on the headphones. Because there's no other way of reacting. Well, there is another way of reacting, but I haven't mastered it. I don't know about you. So you say, do you realize the time it is? He says, yes, I do. Why didn't you tell me this all during the day? You'll know when you need to know it is the answer you'll get. Can't it wait till the morning? Absolutely not. You have to leave, and you have to leave immediately. Unless you are a saint in the making, and unless you have handled all of this, this is stuff that takes us by surprise all of the time. And your emotional reaction will tell you a great deal about your spirituality and where you really are at, as opposed to where you think you're at. Now, the difficulty we have with that is we're not able to relate to get up in the middle of the night, taking the child and going to Egypt, because that is not what he asks. But supposing he asks you to do something that you don't want to do, that is incredibly inconvenient, it's going to cause a great deal of hardship and trouble for you. And he wants you to do it, and do it now. Are you able to say yes to it? How we get around this in our Christianity, let me tell you how we get around it. We have what we call an escape clause. You know what it is? That was a specific request for a very, very unique couple, a once-off situation. I have noticed that God is forever pulling suddenness onto me. He does ask me to do things that are incredibly inconvenient, bordering maybe on being inconsiderate. It doesn't seem to have stopped. It looks different from Mary and Joseph, I grant you that. I remember one time praying in a city in America. I said, Jesus, do you realize there's a fellow just a half block up there and he could do this job? Why drag me halfway across an ocean? It's a fair request, isn't it? His prayer should be good enough. And I wouldn't mind your man. You know where your man ends up? He's down in Cork every summer. He does a conference down there. I said, Jesus, I have a plan. I'll do the conference in Cork. He does the prayer in his own city and we'll sort it out. It's a fair request, isn't it? It's logical. It's considerate. It's significantly cheaper. And it makes more sense. No. He puts me over there, put your man over here, and you can't budge him. Before I get to that, I said to you, I'm not getting anyone here, I'm really giving you an example of how Jesus and I interact with these things. For the most part, I do okay with this stuff. But there are certain occasions that I don't. First of all is, you don't muck up my birthday. You don't muck it up. I don't muck up Jesus' birthday on Christmas Day. I do the best on it, and the least he can do for me, a man of God, is not to muck up my birthday. I tell you now, my theory is he mucked up my birthday in 2018. If he was here, he himself would have a different viewpoint. But what I have to give you is the truth. Do you like that? My version of the truth. And what I discovered was the birthday is very important to me. And what he did was he pulled anticipation. Now, why would he want to do that? It's 24 hours in the year, just one 24 hours in the year, for goodness sake. So anticipation of the hour of birthday can start in August. In August, I got a kind of an advance notice, but I had to ignore it because it was a bit unsettling. So I can't say I didn't get some tinkling, because I did. But it was unsettling. Jesus, have you got that sense? You get a kind of a prompting from the Lord or an uneasy feeling. Have you got that? And you just say, I don't, that can't be. It can't be. He wouldn't. He would. That's the problem. That's the problem. Exactly the problem. So it was around August, and I got this one day. Birthday, Pat. Who has given you birth? All life is from whom? From God. What he was trying to say to me is, your birthday is not your own. Actually, I have a claim on it, because it's I have given you the power to even be birthed. You know you're already a loser, aren't you? There's something coming in that is not going to fit into the plan. So, it was all right anyway. I did okay with having to pull back the anticipation. You know, because, you know, all right, so we're into August. We have another 6 weeks before the birthday, so we can, you know, we can make up for lost time. In fairness, we can. But there was no sign of the anticipation getting given back. And now we are, I think, maybe a week before the birthday, maybe 10 days to give God a bit of credit. And he speaks again. This time he says, you can have your anticipation back and you can plan your birthday. It's too late. It's too late. You're 5 weeks too late with your anticipation. Have you ever experienced this of where something is good and the good is taken out of it for you? And then it's given back, but it's useless to you. Why? Because the good is gone from it. So he then gives me the birthday back. And then closer to the birthday, he said, on the day of your birthday, I will require you to do no work for me. You can do whatever you want. Well, lawful and legal, obviously. But because he had killed the anticipation, it was really hard to plan it. Of course, what he was trying to do actually was show to me how important anticipation is to me. Of course, I couldn't see that there and then. And then I tried my level best to make it work. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. Every musician in the country was bloody well retired on the night of the birthday. There wasn't a decent gig anywhere. I swear to God, I tried it. Normally, at the stroke of midnight, on that my birthday, I get this wonderful feeling. We're up and running. It was as blank and as bland as you could get. I went to bed about 1 o'clock. 7 o'clock in the morning, the feeling was even worse. And I said, Jesus, this is important. It's one day a year, for goodness sake. And this fills me. And you expect me to tear around the place and the tank half empty, and you won't even fill this. Unreasonable, inconsiderate. Very hard. You see, it's all right until it affects your heart. It's only when it affects your heart there's real trouble. You know what I mean? You can handle the inconvenience of it. You know, maybe a bit of a rant. And you'll get over it. But if it affects your heart, you're really in trouble. This thing affected my heart. And so, no matter what I did for the birthday, I had to do something or I was in trouble. So, I did have birthday cake and I had something to drink and I got a CD. But I couldn't do the breakfast like I normally do. I couldn't do Glendalough. I said, there's no way I'm going to that place and hearing it from God after he mucking it up. Don't want to hear what he has to say. Unless it's an official apology. It never came, I have to tell you. It never came. So here I am a month later, and Ruth knows about this and Sonia knows about it. See, I have to talk to God for a living. So we're like a couple that follow, you know, we just notes are given, you know. Dinner in the fridge. You know, you're waiting for the, hope it poisoned you. Dinner in the fridge. So God and I just did what we had to do. And eventually we started it. And he said, I give it back to you. You do what you want with it. You cannot blame me for how the day went. That was you. That was your emotions. That was you. So how did I resolve that? And then I'm nearly finished. I resolved by saying, Jesus, I hold a different viewpoint to you. But on we press. I know, a dangerous thing to say to Jesus. He saw it one way, I saw it another. I said, Jesus, I see it differently from you, to be honest. But on we go. And that did it for the time being. Obviously, it didn't sort it out completely for a while. And I realized, and I'll tell you why he did it eventually. There was a reason for it. But I couldn't see it there and then. The other thing he said to me, which you agree with me, I am right. No. Are you ready for this? No. Is, you know, I did my birthday and I started at 12 midnight and I'd go on maybe to 2 o'clock in the morning, a good concert, a few muffins, and I'd pack as much into the birthday, the 24 hours, as I could. As much thing as filled my heart. I'd have a breakfast, a walk, I would watch a movie, I would listen to a concert. I had everything that could fill me. Is that a fair thing to do? It was lawful, legal, and it's just one day. Do you know what he said to me? It's a bit excessive. What's excessive about it? It's 24 hours. Excessive. Why does it all have to be in one day? Because it's only one day, Jesus. Can you not spread it out? I can, but I don't want to. There lied the problem. There had been a warning given to me. Not a warning. There had been a signal given to me, which I ignored the year before because the lads bought me a ticket to London to see a show, right? But you're in the West End. So I said, I can do an afternoon matinee. I can do a show at the West End at 7:30. And I can do Ronnie Scott's at 11:30. No, it's a bit tight, but I can do all three. And I've got 3 days there. I could get 9 shows in. Does that sound a bit excessive to you? Well, you have the mind of Christ in that, right? To me, that is not excessive. Excessive is going to the shops every week. Going to 3 shows in over 3 days is not excessive. He said to me, that is excessive. You cannot do that. You can have 1 show a day. It's like giving a child a bar of chocolate. You get 1 square each day. Desperate. So, that's where things were at. It's very funny, isn't it? You wouldn't think now that I'd be rattling on with God with this. But that's the Egypt. That's the Egypt. So get up, take the child, and escape to Egypt. Joseph, we're nearly finished. Joseph's response was this. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt. Do you know what Joseph had? Which is a remarkable thing considering he was a young man. Instant obedience. Now that is quite remarkable, isn't it? The command was given, get up. And he got up. Instant obedience. Absolutely brilliant. You have to admire that, don't you? All right, a huge responsibility to keep Jesus safe. But it was instant obedience. But there was more to it than that, because any of us can obey, you know what I mean, when the crisis is on, and rise to the challenge. Especially if it is really important. But the other thing he did was this, the next part of the verse said, so he took the child, the mother, during the night, left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. So he had instant obedience to get him there, and he had total or complete obedience to stay there. Now, look at the text. Does Joseph open his mouth once to God and say, God, this is too sudden? This is incredibly inconvenient and even a bit inconsiderate. The only time that Joseph opens his mouth in this text is to tell Mary what the angel had told him. There is no John McEnroe moment in this. Now, that is remarkable, isn't it? For a young couple. Their life was turned upside down. They had to leave their families and just go in the middle of the night because what was asked of them was for the benefit of other people. In this case, it was to keep Jesus safe. You can't be serious, man. Life application. When I narrowed it all down and I worked my way through this, even I had a few of these things even when I was preparing this. Here's what we all know and we need to be reminded of. First one simply is this. God reserves the right to. If you get nothing else, you get this. God reserves the right to. Number one, spring suddenness on us anytime he chooses. God reserves that right. And whether you acknowledge it or not, he's going to do it anyway. He is not asking you for your permission, nor is he asking me. God has a right to spring that suddenness on us anytime he chooses. Number one. Number two, God reserves the right to insist on his will regardless of our personal inconveniences. And he does it. Not all the time, but he does it a lot. God reserves that right. No, that's an awful long way from God meeting my needs. God can allow stuff into your life that is horrendous. The thing can change quickly. And inconvenience has increased. And he is not asking you for your permission. By his action, he's saying, I am God and I reserve this right. Number three, God reserves the right to require our immediate and total obedience. It's all right when you're asked to do things and you have time to think about it. And you can do it in your own space, in your own time. But when you can't, and this hits you full on, then you know where you really are at spiritually. They say you should be able to put a sermon into one line so that people walk away. What did your man say? Well, he said he was ranting with God and he lost. And that's the truth. You can see. But it boils down to this one, really. Who's in control here? This is ultimately about control. I wanted to control my birthday. And I wanted to reserve the right to do it. I wanted to control how many shows I go to, and I still struggle with it. But apparently, God reserves the right to tell me it's a bit excessive. He can tell me that, and I still hold a different view, but I have to go with it. Because ultimately, this is about control. Who is ultimately in control? When you're sprung with the suddenness, when he insists on his will and it's inconvenient for you, and when it requires an immediate or a total obedience. Who's in control? Ultimately, that's the question. Either I'm in control of certain areas of my life, and then God puts his hand in and you'll say, mind your own business with the greatest respect. You have no right to ask me of this. And he'll say, I have every right, and I'm telling you today, I have the right to do this anywhere, anytime. Spiritually, may I put it this way to you, is the action at Christmas happened in Bethlehem. That's where Mary and Joseph were. The action moved from the stable to a house. And Jesus was there. But all of a sudden, the action moved from Bethlehem to Egypt. And often what happens in the Christian world is we want to stay in Bethlehem. Because Bethlehem we can control. Bethlehem is safe. Bethlehem is convenient. But he says, no, I want you to go to Egypt. Because that's where I'm moving to. Joseph and Mary moved to Egypt and they moved back to Nazareth. So as they went, the action went with them. You say, and I say, I want to follow Jesus. I want to be where he wants me to be. You can't stay in Bethlehem if Jesus wants you to go to Egypt. You can stay in Bethlehem if you want. But then you know who is in control there. Jesus has moved on. And he will love you in Bethlehem. And he will leave you in Bethlehem. But he has moved on. And Jesus will leave you in control. But in control, you'll be left there, and you'll be left there on your own. And the only thing you're able to control is yourself. And nothing else. Many of us have left Bethlehem. But it's a long road to Egypt. And what gets us is the weariness of it. God has a right to spring anything he wants on me, anywhere, anytime. He has the right to insist on his will over my personal inconveniences. And he has a right, whether I like it, to immediate or total obedience. And I know by my response who is in control. Either he is in control of my life and leading it, or else there's a section of my life where I'm controlling it and I'm not budging. But I ain't going no further until I am willing to release that control. Ultimately, all the thing about the birthday, all the thing about the shows has only got to do with one thing: entitlement. I feel I am entitled to. And God knows you'd say I am at times. But God reserves the right to remove that any time that he chooses. Because it's not an entitlement. It is a measure of his grace. And if he is in control, he has a right to disturb and throw that around any way he wants. The fact that I rant up and all that means is that I'm still trying to control that side of it. And there lies the battle. So, You want me to do what? You can't be serious, man. He'll say, yes, I am. This is what I want you to do, and I want you to do it now. That's why you offer him your praying is, you pray that I will continue to do the will of God. Because only the Lord knows that they could come and say, I will not go another inch further. And he'll say, well, he's patient with me because he knows the old rant. He has the headphones on, the noise cancelling, so the angel doesn't tell him half the stuff. We're stuck there, Jesus, but give us a day or two and we'll move him on. Ultimately, this is where it's at. Do you know, and my cousin comment, I did a seminar like this 2 years ago called Dealing with the Unexpected. I didn't want to do this. Because I said, I'm going to be the first to be tested on this. He's going to spring something on me. It's going to be downright inconvenient. It's going to be even considerate. And then it's going to be another issue about control. And we have enough of them. There's enough things going on, enough ranting going on to put another thing in there. And while he was doing it, he said, this is what I want you to do after church on Sunday. And this is what I want you to do on Monday. And then as a measure of grace, after church, he says, I'll give you an hour off to have your lunch and rest, and then you can do it. You know what I'm saying? As if I should be grateful for an hour off. As if I should be grateful. Be going mad. But he doesn't hear those things, you know. And I trust that he was gone away from heaven at the moment and hear those comments. And I realize I'm moving. But I am not moving without mumbling, complaining, and grumbling. But at least I am moving. I think God has more respect for the mover than for the person who said, Jesus, I love you, you love me, I have no intention to do it. I'll rant and rave, but I'll eventually do it for you. But ultimately, it boils down to who is in control. What the prayer? Well, Lord, what can we say? But it is difficult to give up control. And Lord, it is also difficult to think that we have given it up, only to realize that there are pockets unknown to us. But they are dear to our heart. And Lord, what happens? But you put your finger on it. And then, Lord, there is uproar. Because we have not surrendered those areas. In all of us, but not all of us, in many of us, there is that sense of entitlement. And, Lord, that is a trap. But also, Lord, we feel, Lord, that you'd ask us, but the demands won't be so high that it won't crush us. But sometimes, Lord, that's exactly what you do. But it's not for badness you crush us. But Lord, it's to show us what's really going on in our hearts. Finally, Lord, in this text, all this moving, all going to Egypt, was because Mary and Joseph were entrusted with the safety of a child to serve others. Lord, may we know that our obedience, whether it is instant or total, does matter to other people. It's not just an independent between us and God. It does matter. So Lord, help us to release control and give it to you, Lord, in the areas of where you are pointing to us and say, just give it to me and trust me. But no, I reserve the right to do what I want to do whenever I want to do it. So, Lord, that our hearts are settled so we don't stay in Bethlehem when we should be in Egypt. And all God's people said, There was another famous incident of it, which I didn't put on the tape for this reason.